Greetings. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. This is getting quite interesting. The last two radio shows I've done, I've actually been hung up on and cut off, and twice in one show. So with the Kevin Smith show. So these phone lines are getting pretty bizarre. There's nothing really wrong with them. They work perfectly until we come on the air and decide to bring some breaking news or some awesome information. But we're sitting here and we're just in the middle of the teacher's training class. We're having amazing things happen in this class as usual. But one of the most amazing things is we actually had Mary appear over the group at the teacher's training, and we have it on film. So we did photograph this. There was multiple witnesses, probably about 25 people present who were there. And a very dear friend of mine, Khan, who's a Japanese monk, is here. And he's the one that took the photographs. And he also photographed the feline, six-dimensional felines showing up. So those are all on the site here, the As You Wish site. You can check into that. They aren't on the eSETI site yet. They'll be up there really soon. But without any further ado, I want to welcome Alfred Weber. He's been a good friend. He's come out to the ranch, and he's experienced what's going on here. And I love his straight-upness and his integrity, and he tells it like it is. So without any further ado, I want to welcome Alfred on the show. Alfred, are you with us?
Yes, I am, James, and I'm very, very happy to be here. You know, and our topic tonight, the typology of ET, actually fits right into these pictures that of dimensional ETs and of the Mary figure, it's really quite a synchronicity here. I'm looking at the 17 pictures. Actually, people can go on to Facebook. Those of your listeners who have access to Facebook, and just go onto Facebook and search for the eSETI Ranch, ECETI Ranch, and then you'll just scroll down, and then there's an album there. You'll see the picture of Mary, and then there's an album. It'll take you right to the 17 photos, and that fits right into the new typology of extraterrestrial civilizations, which James, you and I had talked about being the topic earlier for tonight's show.
Yeah, it's a definite topic I want to cover. We've got the things happening right here. One thing, we can talk about this later, but I'd love to get into the limitations of ufology and ufologists, and how they just pigeonhole this into one category or the other. And I love how you're actually categorizing this into many different levels and bringing a broader perspective to people on what's really going on.
Right. Well, what happened, James, was that about eight months ago, I was contacted by Oxford University Press, which is a division of Oxford University, and they asked me if I was interested in writing a book on extraterrestrial civilizations and the law. That is, how would the question of law apply to extraterrestrial civilizations? Because my background is as an international lawyer, and I've taught law at a number of major universities. So I began to address those particular issues, and I realized that before even addressing those issues of looking at how law would apply to extraterrestrial civilizations, we had to develop a typology of extraterrestrial civilizations. In other words, what is the most distinguishing characteristic that, by which extraterrestrial civilizations can be characterized. If you look at conventional typology, it's defined as, quote, the study of types. And in anthropology, a typology is, quote, the division of culture by races. Or in archaeology, it's a typology is, quote, the classification of things according to their characteristics. Or in psychology, a typology is, quote, the classification of things according to personality types. And so then I went searching and looked at the typologies that had been developed for extraterrestrial civilizations, and I saw that they hadn't quite gotten to it yet. There was one that had been developed by Nikolai Kardashev that Dr. Michio Kaku made popular, and that's a typology developed on a civil, quote, a civilizations of technological advancement. In other words, what kind of energy do they use?
Yeah.
And it seemed to me that what kind of energy they use is not yet the most fundamental criterion by which to class them. And then I looked at another typology which had been developed by Dr. Michael Sala, who both you and I know, and he had classified extraterrestrial civilizations by race or approximate location and by, quote, whether they were cooperating with or outside Earth's military-industrial extraterrestrial complex. But, you know, the universe or the multiverse, James, is a big place, and the Earth is just one tiny little dot. And if you're going to try and classify the entire universe as to whether they're cooperating with Earth's military-industrial complex, it seems like you're sort of putting the cart before the horse or having the tail wag the dog or, you know, being kind of Earth-centric.
Yeah.
So what I came up with, which I think really works, and I think it feeds into what has been your experience, is that fundamentally the way that extraterrestrial civilizations are classified in the universe are by dimensions. In other words, by dimensions in which they are anchored and located and that define their basic home. So what we did was to very, very roughly, just at the beginning, because we wanted this to be, since it had to pass all of the rigors of, quote, the scientific mindset. Now, we both know what that means, right? But at least we had to go out there that this had to be an evidence-based typological model, i.e., for each type that we put forward, we had to develop evidence. In other words, either documentary evidence such as photographs or very good witness evidence that would pass the test in a court of law. So what we did is we developed an evidence-based typological model that divided extraterrestrial civilizations in, that is, dimension-based. Because we said the fundamental characteristic is not race, it's not intention, it's not location, you know, but it's basically dimension. What dimension are they located in? So just for purposes of introduction, we divided them, into extraterrestrial civilizations, third dimensions. And in the first category of third dimensions, we had two subcategories. First of all, the solar system civilizations of the third dimension. And that is solar system civilizations that are based in the third dimension in our solar system. one of which, of course, you and I are members of, and that's the human race on planet Earth. But there are other intelligent civilizations in the third dimension that we can now identify and that we have documentary and witness evidence of, such as the intelligent humanoid civilization living under the surface of Mars. That they live in advanced cities there. They have strategic relationships with other civilizations, such as the human civilization on Earth. Then we have a second subcategory, and that is deep space civilizations of the third dimension. And that is intelligent extraterrestrial civilizations that are based still in the third dimension on a planet, solar system, or space station in our or another galaxy or in some other location in this known physical third dimension universe. And so that was kind of an entry level in this matrix whereby we then could go on and supply evidence for each of these categories that then could be supplied to what I would call your third dimension scientists, right? Then we move into another category, which I think begins to get into the sort of extraterrestrial civilizations with which you and the people at ISETI and other places are most familiar with and are interacting with, and that is hyperdimensional civilizations. And that is intelligent civilizations that are based in dimensions or universes parallel to or encompassing our own dimension, and that may use technologically advanced physical form and or transport when entering our known dimension or universe. In other words, there are many, many different classes of hyperdimensional extraterrestrial civilizations. Let's take the ones that we are most familiar with and that listeners to your program are most familiar with, and those of us who go to the ISETI Ranch and to the ISETI Conference are most familiar with, and those are the ultra-dimensional, hyper-dimensional civilizations who can manifest using ultra-dimensional ships and or other means and manifest in the evenings or during the day and have been documented via photographs and are amply displayed on your website at ISETI.org. And you're more familiar with the precise dimensional origin from which those extraterrestrial or hyperdimensional civilizations originate, but they have access. They have access to our dimension here. And if we look at the photographs that we're looking here, that are on, I'm just looking at the Facebook page. This is the ISETI Ranch album at the ISETI Ranch page on at Facebook.com. There are about 17 photographs here. There's about at least three of the feline, and then at least two of the sort of the face of a very Virgin Mary-like or figure, and then at least two or three others of other figures, but perhaps James, you could give us more of an explanation of what the other ones are, because I can't. Mm-hmm. But those would fit within beings of hyperdimensional civilizations that have access to our dimension using whatever mode to manifest within our third dimension here, either a representational mode, such as here in the form of a feline, or in the form of a Virgin Mary-like figure, or in other forms, that is a different format from the hyperdimensional and ultra-dimensional shifts that we see in the evening sky. But this typology of extraterrestrial civilizations then gives us a matrix by which our brains, which have been trained and have been sort of genetically developed in a third dimensional world and are very much of a kind of a 0-1, you know, they're kind of a digital brain, can begin to classify things and can begin to think about things and put together you know, a sequence so we can begin to understand more relationships and meanings, you know, on our left brain side. Last week, you and I talked about the hyperdimensional extraterrestrial civilizations that were appearing, that started appearing in 1944, that had appeared on the same day, July 12th, and then July 26th, 1952, and then appeared on the same day, July 12th and July 26th, 2002, 50 years later, right over the U.S. Capitol in Washington, in Washington, D.C., and they were the identical, you know, type of hyperdimensional ship that were now photographed in high definition, those then there are photographs of hyperdimensional ships that appeared over the millennial celebration. This is December 31st, 1999, to January 1st, 2000. This is in an article that we just published yesterday, where this information was leaked to researcher Robert M. Stanley by via U.S. Capitol Police officer at the U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms office. So we're having informal leaking of this happening, you know, through the U.S. Capitol Police, and these are sort of cigar-shaped ships that were over the crowd. There was more than a million people there at the millennium celebration, five cigar-shaped ships. A number of craft emerged from each of the five cigar-shaped ships, and they started swooping over the crowd, and the crowd started yelling and praying with them and playing with them and laughing. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. Capitol Police, that, you know, and the Metropolitan Police that were in charge of keeping order, you know, didn't panic. Nobody panicked. Everybody was having a good time interacting with them. And this has been verified. There were thousands of witnesses. So these multidimensional civilizations have been showing up a very important kind of symbolic places, say in the U.S., you know, at the U.S. Capitol, at the millennial celebration, landing on the U.S. Capitol building, the exact same place that they landed 50 years earlier. These have been documented by researchers like Wilbur Will Allen, who gets these signals to go out and photograph, and he starts just photographing, and the hyperdimensional civilizations will come in so quickly that he captures them in a photograph, but they have to come in quickly because otherwise they launch F-16s after them. And so they just come into the dimension very, very quickly, so they can't launch the fighter ships after them. So this is what we've been able to do, you know, and now we have all of this cumulative evidence. Now, there is also finally in the new extraterrestrial civilizations typology, with regard to extraterrestrial law and governance, you know, in the same way that we have law and governance here on Earth. I mean, we're not satisfied that our governance authorities have legitimacy or have integrity. We're not satisfied that the law is being applied with justice. But what we've been able to do is to also provide for a within the typology, within this matrix, is a place for extraterrestrial governance authorities, and that is legally constituted extraterrestrial governance authorities with a jurisdiction over a defined territory or dimension, say, such as the Milky Way Galactic Federation, which itself has been empirically located in replicable research. And that's what we did in our book Exopolitics, where we had, through scientific remote viewing, established replicable communication with a representative of the Galactic Federation of the Milky Way that would come back time and time again and give sort of specific indications of what the Galactic Federation's outlook was for this solar system, specifically with regard to plans for relationships between two of the third dimensional civilizations within our solar system, namely the human civilization on Earth and the human civilization on Mars. It looks like the Galactic Federation, which is located in some tenth or, you know, some upper dimension up there, you can't get there from here, is saying that a way forward for our civilization here, our human civilization, and for the human civilization on Mars is to begin to reassume a transparent and open diplomatic relationships between our two planets, which have been broken off for the last 11,500 years since we had a great solar system catastrophe around 9500 BC. So this typology, I think, is something that, you know, it's not rigid, but at the same time, it allows for bringing conversation around. What I'm looking here at the photo album of the photos that Cam took at the ISETI training, and each of those and shows how that can be located within a scientifically replicable and scientifically based matrix. It shows how the photographs of the ultra-dimensional craft, which are seen in the evenings, you know, when or during the day, say, after the conferences, when people go out and start, or during the weekends, when people at Iseti start bringing in the craft, mm-hmm. It shows when those photographs, say, on July 16th or July 26th, 1952, where you had a flotilla of ultra-dimensional spacecraft right over the U.S. Mm-hmm. Capitol that was independently filmed by the Disney Company, by other companies, mm-hmm. and 50 years later was photographed by Will Allen, and also the five cigar-shaped ships, hyperdimensional ships, and all the subships that came out of those hyperdimensional ships that were playing with the million-plus people at the millennial celebration on, New Year's Eve 2000 mm-hmm. on the Washington Mall. You can now begin to take a scientifically based matrix and begin to put all of these in a matrix. So you know, our third dimensional brains can begin to understand it, and it all comes into a picture. And that picture is of the multiverse, and that is we live in a living organism known as a multiverse with many dimensions, with beings that can traverse dimensions, with civilizations that can traverse dimensions, with civilizations that exist in many different dimensions, have a different relationship to spirit and matter. And so it's like a learning ladder for us, and it's part of our learning curve as a civilization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you can hear me or not. I'm getting a little feedback.
Oh yeah.
The Millennium Incident. Now there must be some really good footage out there of this incident, and I think it's interesting. I haven't seen it. It must have been completely sat on and squashed. Do you have any copies of that?
Yeah, it's very hard to find photographs. What we've been able to do is to find independent reports, mm-hmm. Such as we found an independent report on the National UFO Reporting Center mm-hmm. that stated that there were five cigar-shaped ships. Mm-hmm. If people go to exopolitics.com, you will see our most recent article there, which you just published yesterday, and go in there, and there's an interview there with Robert M. Stanley, who has pieced together a lot of the research on the millennial, incident, and and on how difficult it is to find footage of that event. But it was, you know, there have been thousands of people that have come forward as witnesses of that event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's too bad somebody can't come forward with some great video of that. I know how that is when you have some just incredible evidence or proof. It just vanishes. And I mean, I've seen that in my own work. I had all this stuff all downloaded, just tons of stuff, and all the hard drives, the external hard drives, everything got fried. And we pretty much know how that happened, but it was by somebody that came in and with some toys or something and just fried it. But, a lot of people have some pretty phenomenal evidence, and we have to admit there is an element out there that really wants to make sure all of this doesn't get out to the public or just vanishes and goes away.
Yeah, it looks like there is a current power structure which is trying to create a virtual reality for for humanity where we live in kind of this box.
Mm-hmm.
And the box is like, you know, there's nothing in the box but these stars out there. And it's just really, really trying hard to keep that. So that's why all of these photos are and bringing to public light all of these events and then bringing them into classifications so that people,
mm-hmm.
they're not just anomalies. Oh, it's not just a light, but this is a hyperdimensional ship. This is a probe
mm-hmm.
that's coming in. And as you said, this is a sixth dimensional being and being able to create scientifically based schema that then makes sense out of all of these photos such that that force, that element out there can't erase them and can't keep the human race in the blankness that they're trying to keep them in. So
mm-hmm.
that's part of the task, part of the intellectual task that we're doing is to get as much meaning and context out there behind this as we can. For example, right now on my computer, I'm looking at a very large I guess it's up to 4,000 time enlargement of the Mary photograph, and I wonder if you could just tell me a bit about that, because you were there, about
mm-hmm.
how that happened.
Yeah, it was quite, what happened here is we have a Japanese monk here by the name of Khan, and, you know, he's lived a lot of his life in a cave, and he's studied with all the masters of the East and the different disciplines, but very awake, very beautiful, big, great big guy, you know. But beautiful soul, you know, very childlike in a way, and he sees energies and feels presences. And what happened was we have a mound that we meditate on quite a bit, and it's like a place, it's where things, the veils between worlds are very thin. And the first thing he did when he got here, well, let's go back a little bit. He was here last year, and he actually filmed Kuan Yin appearing to him. And it started as a beautiful green light, and then it turned into multicolored orbs, and then it formed into a perfect picture of Kuan Yin. And when we looked at his photograph compared to his the painting of Kuan Yin, they're identical. I mean, totally identical. It's just amazing. So that was the first one. And then he was on the mound here a couple days ago and meditating, and he saw this angled light starting to appear. It was like these two lights crossing together, you know, with this beautiful kind of pinkish energy coming in. And then the next thing, there's this feline standing in front of him, and she was, you know, I would say probably 10 feet tall, very tall. You know, he was showing me by a light, they're at least 8 to 10 feet tall. And so he snapped three pictures of them when they appeared to him. And he said they were very playful and very loving. And he goes very, very high, extremely high. He doesn't speak a lot of English, you know, so we had to get, you know, get some of it in the translation. But the emotional energy around it, when he would get tears in his eyes and talk about how powerful this was. And then he took a photograph last night of very late, in the, you know, around 3 o'clock in the morning, he saw a blue light starting to appear, and he thought it was the moon, because it is a full moon. And all of a sudden, his room started lighting up, and there was a brilliant blue light outside. And so he got out, and he looked up, and it was totally cloud cover. There wasn't any moon. And then he saw the light appearing in front of him, and he took a picture of that and got this beautiful blue form appearing, which I've talked about before. I have that happen quite often here. I'll see the energy appear right before some other event. And so he photographed that, And then he snapped another photo, and she appeared to him, and he got a photo of her face appearing to him. And then in the teacher's training class today, in the middle of the class, we were working with her energy, and she came in, and she brought in some Pleiadians, and actually said she is from the Pleiades. That's where she's coming from now. And she's advanced to the Pleiades system. And, you know, even in the Bible, it talks about the sweet energies of the Pleiades and those higher fifth and sixth, seventh dimensional beings coming from there. But it's quite interesting. But she's coming from that dimension or that area or that civilization, you might say. And so she appeared again in the room, and everybody was feeling her energy. It was just phenomenal. People were receiving healings and just you know, feeling their hearts open up and feeling this wonderful energy coming in. And so he saw her again, he grabbed his camera and took a picture of her, and sure enough, her face, the perfect image of her face was right over the group, you know. So that was the last photo, and that was just taken, you know, around, I think it was around noontime that was taken today. So that's a brand new event.
Right, right. And so this is as we open up more our hearts and our minds, and our society opens up more, and there are protected portals like Iseti, where the beings can come in, they will. And hopefully this will now, with the changes that are coming in 2012 and 2013, this will begin to spread to the point where they can begin to appear in more and more places.
Yeah, the one thing they made it very clear is we have to rise to the occasion. We have to continue to do our meditation work and our process-oriented work and really clean up our consciousness and, you know, live in harmony with each other and the planet and the environment. It's very important. But as long as we maintain that and we're moving forward in that direction, they will step in and assist and protect and heal and offer their way of life and way of consciousness and incredible abilities, you know, to us as long as we keep moving in that direction. But if we keep moving in the old direction that it seems like most of our leadership has taken us into, this just pure unbridled greed and power over others with no respect whatsoever for life or the very platform for life, our planet, then they're just going to let them have that experience, you know, the big reaction that comes from taking that road. But what we're seeing here is definitely ambassadors are connecting in. They're understanding the big picture, and that's what I'd really love to talk about, is the big picture, is that when we open up and realize we're not just a body and a personality, that we're a spirit that has a body and a personality, the rest of the dimensions start opening up to us. And then we get the big picture. We get the real picture of what's going on. But my question to you is, why do you think the UFO community is so threatened by the big picture and realizing the spiritual component to ufology or these ultra-dimensional beings?
Well, I think that they're very definite. They're very definite historical roots to it, and even the word UFO is a term that was coined by the military intelligence establishment of the time. It was right after the hyperdimensional flyovers of the U.S. Capitol in July. There's a big flap in July of 1952. Then there were apparently some some, you know, there were various armed conflicts, mm-hmm. and very much of a confrontational posture, mm-hmm. and it's things that are, you know, that are, and in 1953, that's when the Robertson panel of the CIA came in, in which they stated that any mention of UFOs or of extraterrestrials in either media, science, education, government has to be accompanied by ridicule because, mm-hmm. quote, of a fear that the population will panic. And so since that time, even the word UFO was coined by the military establishment so as to kind of make it this abstract term and to taint it with this aura of ridicule or of something unknown. And there's always been a large disinformational or infiltration component of either, you know, military intelligence agents or disinformation. It's always been kind of a militarized field to try and exclude any of the upper dimensional ethical spiritual extraterrestrial factor from there. And probably right about that time was when some of the lower ETs made their approaches and secured their contracts with the U.S. government. Mm-hmm. The abduction contracts, some of the Greys and the reptilians secured the abduction rights and basically gave some technology over and either reptilianized or grayized the U.S. government or parts of it. So, mm-hmm. You know, so then the UFO crowd then has been a creature of the ufology, and the UFO movement has been a creature of U.S. government disinformation. They, mm-hmm. in essence, have been a movement that has grown up obeying the parameters set out by the CIA Robertson panel, and they've been, you know, and that is, oh, well, we'll just study this as kind of nuts and bolts, and rather than studying it as a full phenomenon and as the, you know, as a dimensional, you know, a dynamic of extraterrestrial civilizations which are, you know, from different dimensions and with different agendas and types. And so that ufology really grew up, I think, as a branch of American government brainwashing. And mm-hmm. You could call them, you know, intelligence agencies, subcontractors.
Yeah, and, you know, I can't agree with you more because I am seeing now, if you look at the background of many talk show hosts and some of the top people and what's going on, you know, you follow them back and it goes back to military intelligence or Navy intelligence, and that those are the guys funding all these black projects. And, you know, it's unbelievable how infiltrated the UFO community is, and when you do have people, you know, that's why I have these conferences here. I bring out the real people, the people that are standing in their integrity, that are doing the real research and connecting into these higher dimensional beings and realizing that you know, there's much more to the universe than grays and reptilians and nuts and bolts, which is where they want to keep it all. And, you know, keep this and then get it, you know, so they can build it up later as a threat to keep the war industry and black projects going. But you know, it's, people are going to have to wake up and smell the coffee here because, you know, you look at what this corporate-sponsored program is doing to the planet, you know, with the war industry, the oil industry. You know, the oil industry now is being clearly seen for what it is. The banksters have done their thing. And we need to look at these groups and look at the fruits of their work and their labor and see if we really want to go in that direction anymore.
Yeah, we're at a real real turning point, James. And I know that we've been working with a independent scientist, and we'll be coming out Monday with a program showing that the British Petroleum operation in the Gulf of Mexico was in fact a false flag operation, an intentional with the mission of quote wrecking the environment, and that's its actual function as part of a continued war with many different types of outputs, one of which is to try and really finally bring down the U.S. If they can. We're coming up to this, you know, we are at this crossroads, and so the greater the working connection and the working relationships and the opening of portals and relationships with upper dimensional ethical extraterrestrials and beings that then can cement our own soul missions and can lead to the higher evolution of the community of human souls as we evolve together with the planet. That is our true destiny, and that is part of the process that is occurring now. And it's occurring everywhere. I mean, you know, you have people inside the U.S. Capitol Police that are leaking reports. I mean, one cannot stereotype anything right now. You have people that are working with the light everywhere, and with spirit everywhere. So it's really necessary to encourage an orientation toward spirit, toward the upper dimensions, to really preserve, you know, to put all of this information out, to document it, to continually keep on bringing it out, because this is how people know that there's something greater than the box of death that they're attempting to create for people, you know, on a continual basis. And if people doubt that they're trying to do that, all you have to do is turn on the television and look at what they're doing to the Gulf of Mexico, and that's an intentional act of environmental war. That is no accident. That is the new 9/11. It's the 9/11 occurred in 2001. In 1995, there was a deck of Illuminati cards that came out. One card was 9/11. It showed the complete Twin Towers. It showed from the first difference between the first and the second tower, they had it completely down. And they had an oil spill card, which is showing exactly with the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico right now. And we have all showed how they have done that, how in 1971 they already had images of the Twin Towers of 9/11 through their Stargate time travel. And so we are now watching environmental false flags that have been planned 20 and 30 years in advance, one of which was 9/11, the other of which was April 20th, 2011, April 20th is Adolf Hitler's birthday. That was the day that the oil spill hard. And they call it, on the street, you call it a 420, April 20th. Because everybody knows that that's when the Illuminati likes to do stuff. For some reason, this high, they like to go in for this black occult magic of let's do it on Hitler's birthday. So that's,
Yeah, we're out of time, unfortunately. I'm getting a message from the producer saying we've got to wrap it up. So can you give any contact information? I know you've got the website there at exopolitics.com.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, sure. People can go to exopolitics.com, and we can be reached via email at exopolitics@exopolitics.com.
Awesome. I can't thank you enough, Alfred, for coming on the show. It's been awesome. We'll do it again soon, and have a great evening.
Thank you.
All right, wrapping it up, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off. Have a great evening, and pay attention to the skies, and pay attention to your environment.